Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time devoted fan of difficult women.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that boasts its own queen of sorts, though not of the silver screen, but of local broadcast and, for one bright, shining moment a decade and a half ago, the winner of a nationwide film critic contest held in conjunction with the Sundance Film Festival. Take a bow, Mary Pat.
It was 25 years ago.
We're celebrating movie queens this week as we take a look at two streaming documentaries. The first is easily summed up by its title, Elizabeth Taylor, The Lost Tapes, and the second, titled simply and succinctly, Faye, is a look at the life and career of Miss No Wire Hangers herself, Faye Dunaway. We'll review both films before listing our personal choices for the best performances of each. Let's begin with a look at the woman who, according to legend, had violet eyes. And like many, if not most, Hollywood legends, it's false. As Taylor admits in the documentary Elizabeth Taylor, The Lost Tapes, which was directed by Nanette Burstein, her eyes are merely dark blue. But wait, did I say merely? There was nothing about Taylor, one of the great screen stars of the 20th century, that could be described as merely. And Burstein covers them all. Her marriages, eight in all, though two were to Richard Burton. Her career that spanned the better part of six decades and won her two Best Actress Oscars. Not to mention her celebrated beauty that, of course, included those piercing blue eyes. Based on 40 hours of tape discovered after the death of writer Richard Merriman, Burstein's film is a look at Taylor, not just in her own words, but also in the words of many of those who knew her well.
But I believe that the notion of the lost tapes really is what makes this documentary work. And so supposedly there were 40 hours discovered after Merriman died. Seems improbable, but perhaps true. And I think, you know, he was a journalist. I think he anticipated writing a biography of her and using, you know, her own words in various ways to capture sort of what was happening. And so he obviously had a level of comfort with her that Elizabeth Taylor in The Lost Tapes was willing to talk frankly about different aspects of, you know, her position as really one of the original superstars of cinema. And we're now seeing Chappell Roan has come out and said, hey, I'm a performer, I'm an artist, a singer, and I'm not tabloid fodder. And so she's pushing back. But I think we believe that these people who are in the public eye, such as Taylor Swift, are public property in a way. And I think that one of the things that this documentary does and focuses on is sort of what happens under those circumstances to the individuals who are affected directly. And in fairness, there was a lot of stuff to talk about in terms of her personal life and some of the choices that she made. But ultimately, I thought the documentary struck a balance between talking about her prowess as an actress and how it grew over the years, because we see her basically as a child actor, as she's saying, I was working with horses and dogs. And then all of a sudden she's thrust into this sort of adult situation, you know, when she's 17 years old. And because she is so beautiful, she was believable as an older woman.
But she's still working with dogs.
Yeah. Hey, those could be fighting words. But yeah, so I think that if you can appreciate, and I think many people will be familiar or think they're familiar with the trajectory of her career, you're not going to learn a lot of super new things, but I appreciated the way that it was presented.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you mentioned there being a lot to talk about. This has the classic documentary problem of it gets up to her, like, final decades, and then it's like, oh, no,
we're almost
out of runtime, so yada, yada, yada.
I think her eighth husband got totally lost.
Larry Fortinsky. Yes.
Shout out to Larry Fortinsky. I think, spoiler alert, this is the superior of the two documentaries that we'll be talking about these famous women, and I think it is because of the very candid material that are in these interviews. I mean,
and also, she's deceased, and so she couldn't really push back about anything that was included.
Well, but I also think it's Elizabeth Taylor pretty much diagnosing and psychoanalyzing her relationships, which were a big part of her public image. And I was also thinking about, you mentioned the parasocial relationship thing that we're talking about a lot. Now, I was thinking of that recent documentary about Brooke Shields and thinking, from the moment that she became a public figure, the public could not be normal about Elizabeth Taylor. They were weird about her from the second that they saw her. I mean, they talk about her like a thing. They talk about her like an adult woman when she is a literal child. And so it just goes to show you that this is a thing that has been happening forever and continues to happen. And it also deals with the thing that she grappled with her entire career, which is, am I an actor or am I a movie star? And can both of those things coexist?
And was she a sexual object?
I think she absolutely was. And
I think that she ultimately proved that she was an actor.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's a problem that I think we'll be talking about Joan Crawford a little bit more on the show. It's a similar problem that she had. So, yeah, I enjoyed listening to her talk about herself.
Yeah. Let's now move to another screen queen, one who didn't have quite the famous Taylor, but one whose impact on the film industry was, at least at moments, every bit as powerful. Still alive at the age of 83, Faye Dunaway participated, likely oversaw, the film as directed by Lawrence Bouzereau. And it is mostly a kindly look at the career of a woman who came out of Florida, studied at Boston University, made her way to the New York theater scene long before breaking into the movies, ultimately hitting it big in Arthur Penn's 1967 film Bonnie and Clyde. Employing interviews with the likes of Sharon Stone, Mickey Rourke, filmmaker James Gray, who cast her in his 2000 film The Yards, and Dunaway's son, Liam Dunaway O'Neill, Bouzereau, in his documentary Faye, portrays the actress as a feminist icon whose notorious difficulty, Betty Davis singled her out as being singularly difficult, would be, the film argues, considered typical if she were a man. Whatever the truth of that statement, Faye, the film, is still a worthy view for anyone who is a fan of 20th century cinema.
Well, I don't want to go so far as to say that this is a piece of PR, because it does show her as being notoriously difficult. But when this documentary spends time talking about, you know, oh, she works out every day and she's walking around New York and she's much nicer now, it does feel like it's veering into puff piece territory. Because I'm sorry, but when everyone in Hollywood has a Faye Dunaway story, I have friends that have Faye Dunaway stories. It's a little bit more complicated than that, right? And the movie does talk about the fact that she was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and certainly that contributes to her mood swings over the years and her difficulty over the years. And I think there is something to the fact that she was treated differently because she was a difficult woman in Hollywood. But that's not the whole story. I think this movie, it doesn't approach her with kid gloves necessarily, but it felt like it needed to dig a little bit deeper. And I think you are right on when you say that maybe she wouldn't allow them to dig any deeper. I think the biggest weakness of this documentary, Faye, is that it doesn't really explain why she is such a special performer, because she is. I mean, we talked about her recently in our Chinatown show, but she is as much of a new Hollywood icon as, say, Jack Nicholson. And I think she's really important to American film in the second half of the 20th century. So I would say, you know, maybe watch this if you've seen some of her stuff. But I think the movies that we'll be talking about in the second half of the show will teach you more about Faye Dunaway and why she is worth studying and worth remembering and worth grappling with than this documentary, actually.
I agree.
Well, maybe not the movie I'm going to choose to talk about. But
I don't know.
Yeah,
I know
maybe,
you're
going to
choose it.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, there are some things that have happened to her in the past few years. I mean, she's always been the subject of a lot of critique and commentary about her appearance and her seeming addiction to plastic surgery and so forth.
Which I don't think the movie talks about.
No, not at all.
No, but
and they don't talk about her dismissal from Sunset Boulevard,
right,
you know, because she wasn't able to keep up with the singing parts or whatever. And so I think that it sort of glosses over some of those things. But I think it does give us some idea or some impression of this woman who is beautiful, but not necessarily in the most classic sense. But she has this ability to sort of switch back and forth between being soft and being really hard in different moments. And I think that, you know, especially if we want to talk about in the second half her performance in Chinatown, mm-hmm, I think evidences that probably to the greatest extent than anything else. And, you know, I kind of like the fact that she was in it. And I liked the commentary by different people. So I thought good talking heads, because they weren't like professional talking heads. They were people who knew her, and Sharon Stone in particular was, you know, a mentee of hers.
And I'd love a Sharon Stone documentary.
Don't you think? Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think that's...
Talk about a difficult woman.
Right, oh, well, exactly. Yes. But, and she talks about that, and it's one of the more interesting parts of the documentary.
Right.
Well, if we're going to talk about Sharon Stone, I think the argument for her being singled out as a woman being difficult applies a lot more to her than it, say, it does to others. And one of the funniest things about this film is when we watch Bette Davis, a notoriously difficult woman herself, talking about how difficult Faye Dunaway was.
Well, we should mention that this is an HBO documentary, and one of the good things, I suppose, about it, it's pretty concise. I mean, so it cuts to the chase and may reveal some things that people didn't know in terms of her co-stars and so forth. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah. Anyway, that was our discussion of the documentaries Elizabeth Taylor, The Lost Tapes, and Faye. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to list our personal choices for the best performances by both of the screen queens we've been talking about, Elizabeth Taylor and Faye Dunaway. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the documentary films Elizabeth Taylor, The Lost Tapes, and Faye, which is a study of the life and career of Faye Dunaway. Let's not talk about what each of us considers the career highs of both. I want to point out that Taylor won two Academy Awards amid five nominations, the first for 1960's Butterfield 8 and the second for 1966's Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Dunaway won a single Oscar amid three nominations, and she won for 1976's Network. But as happens in Hollywood, those were hardly the only great performances that both put up on the big screen. Let's take a look at some of their great acting jobs and in the process make a case for our favorites. Why don't you jump in there, Nathan?
Well, if we're starting with Elizabeth Taylor, I mean, you already named what I think is the peak of her filmography, not just in terms of her work, but I think in terms of just the quality of the movie. And that's Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? The directorial debut, feature film debut somehow of Mike Nichols. I mean, one of the most accomplished directorial debuts that has maybe ever been. And I just think with that movie, it's Elizabeth Taylor, who wasn't exactly at a lull in her career, but it's right after Cleopatra, which was a hugely successful movie, but also a notorious production. And she comes in with no vanity whatsoever and says, I'm going to play this woman who is older than me, who is grayer than I have been in movies, and who is just drunk and mean and abusive all of the time.
She was only in her early 30s.
She was
exactly. And she was playing a woman who was 48.
Yeah. And she's with Richard Burton, her husband at the time. And of course, their off-screen life bleeds into the on-screen world of George and Martha in Who's Afraid of Virginia
Woolf. Yeah. And you say, one thing I would take into issue here, you said she came in with no vanity. I just listened to the making of that movie. She came in with a lot of vanity.
Well, I'm not talking about behind the scenes. I'm talking about what's on the screen.
Yes, exactly.
There
was a fight all the way through.
It must have been a shock to the system to see her in that moment playing that role. And of course, that movie was shocking for its time in terms of the language, in terms of the themes. It's the beginning of when Hollywood was willing to show us those things.
The end of the Hays Code, yes.
And so I loved a line she has in the documentary, The Lost Tapes, when she won her Oscar for Butterfield 8. She had just, you know, had horrible pneumonia and almost died. And she says, I didn't win an Oscar for my performance. I won for my tracheotomy, she says, because she was embarrassed by that performance. Well, she won a second Oscar for Virginia Woolf, and she absolutely deserved it.
Absolutely.
That is an incredible movie and an
incredible
performance.
Yeah, apparently she and Eddie Fisher called it Butterball 4 instead of Butterfield 8. They hated
so
that.
So what movie do you have, Mary
Pat?
Well,
I picked one, and again, going back to her career when she was sort of transitioning from doing these child parts, In 1951, she was in the movie A Place in the Sun with Montgomery Clift.
And Shelley Winters.
She became a lifelong friend of Montgomery Clift's. And Shelley Winters. And so she plays this debutante who falls in love with Montgomery Clift's character. He's kind of a working guy who gets a job in his uncle's bathing suit factory. And he starts having a relationship with Shelley Winters' character. So he's sort of caught between two women and two worlds and, you know, is trying to navigate his pathway. But I just like the fact that she was playing a character, obviously, but you can just really see how truly stunningly beautiful she was.
That's right. And it makes the movie work completely because you understand why someone would be driven to murder to have this.
Right. Oh. And of course, it's a black and white film, but a lot of it was filmed at Lake Tahoe, so I really appreciated that aspect of it as well. So, A Place in the Sun, old school Elizabeth Taylor, or new Elizabeth Taylor, depending on your vantage point.
That's a good one.
All right, and then I chose Suddenly Last Summer. One of the movies that she talks about in the documentary, The Lost Tapes, she talks about how through the early 50s, she was in one terrible movie after another. But Suddenly Last Summer, this is maybe not a great film, but it's a fun film to watch. And my late brother and I used to just watch this film and always make jokes. We would quote Katharine Hepburn.
Katharine Hepburn was in it, yeah.
I and Sebastian, it is such, you talked about campy.
Oh,
it is
boy.
A great campy movie, but it's just filled with such classic Katharine Hepburn moments, Elizabeth Taylor moments.
Trying to have her involuntarily committed and lobotomized.
Yeah.
Yes. And then the psychiatrist starts to think, oh, I don't think what I've been told about this woman, Elizabeth Taylor's character, is actually true.
And it's still in 1959 when we were still talking about issues of portraying homosexuality on the big screen. Oh, we can't do that, you know. And it was based upon a play by Tennessee Williams, and Gore Vidal is actually in the film.
And adapted it. And I mean, you know what's wild about Suddenly Last Summer? It's one of several Tennessee Williams movies that she made, and it might not even be the craziest one.
Oh.
And it's crazy.
Yes, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a fun one.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, let's move on to Faye Dunaway.
Well,
Nathan.
Again, talking about best work, this just feels really obvious, but I went with Network from 1976 because, again, it's the movie that Faye Dunaway won her Academy Award for. Because not only do I think it's her best work as an actor, it's just one of my all-time favorite films. It's also one of those movies that is so of its time and yet so timeless. I mean, it's about the ruthlessness of media and about television media and about the ways in which media exploits and devalues people. And at the center of the movie is Faye Dunaway as this, I mean, she is basically the physical embodiment of that idea of if it bleeds, it leads. And she will do anything to top the ratings. And I think the first time I saw Network, which of course was directed by the great Sidney Lumet and written by the great Paddy Chayefsky, I thought it was a little too on the nose because you want to talk about lack of subtlety. This movie doesn't have much, but there is subtlety in the
performances. I want you to go to your windows right now.
Howard Beale, of course, the late, great Peter Finch, who also won an Academy Award. But I think there is subtlety in the characters, and there's subtlety in what goes on between
them,
in their relationships. And there's a lot of subtlety in the Faye Dunaway performance because we see that she has forsaken a personal life. She has forsaken any sense of personal connection and romance because she will do anything to claw her way to the top. And in the documentary Faye, they talk about Network and how she refused to have the edges of that character softened. She wanted to play it as viciously as possible. And man, does she. I think it is one of the greatest performances in any movie by anyone. It's one of the greatest movies, period.
So much so that you totally forget that William Holden, one of the great stars of 20th
century. Robert Duvall.
They're both in that movie.
An incredible movie, Network.
Well, of course, I had to pick a movie that maybe Faye was not exactly enamored with, but honestly, I thought it was an amazing performance, and that's Mommy Dearest.
Preach, yes.
Yes, and this is always the problem that we have when actors are playing real live people. You know, are they imitating? Are they doing, you know, an impersonation? Are they inhabiting the character? And I thought that she inhabited the character. And I think that at least is part of what Faye Dunaway's problem was ultimately with this performance, because she did make it pop. She did make it come to life. It felt so true. but over the top at different points. And that's what I think that Faye Dunaway has made a mistake in sort of disavowing her performance in Mommy Dearest, because it is campy. It is. And that's why it's still shown midnight screenings of this film. And it's become like a camp classic.
In a
you know?
Weird way, it might be her most embraced and rewatched movie, even though it may not be her best. I agree with you. I think she is a force of nature in Mommy Dearest. And whether or not you believe the idea that they didn't know that they were making a camp
movie. How
about
Tina, bring me the X.
I mean, there's just so many, and it's a morally thorny film in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But I mean, she is tearing into that one.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go back to a 1987 film called Barfly that was directed by Barbe Schroeder and paired Faye Dunaway along with Mickey Rourke as basically characters that were created by Charles Bukowski. And Rourke plays Henry Chinaski, the alter ego of Bukowski, and who is, he is a barfly. And Dunaway, who was 46 at the time, had been consigned basically 6 years after Mommy Dearest to doing a lot of television. And she was doing stage plays. She basically had been shut out of the movies for a while. But she is so terrific in this film. Mm-hmm. She embraces that character, and there's still, even though she's an alcoholic and she's a kept woman at one point, there's a smoldering beauty that comes through her character. And I have to admit that one of my favorite parts of the whole movie is when she gets into a fight with Alice Krieg. And it's a cat fight, boy. They're knocking over bar tables and all the men are just standing there going, yeah, hey, go for it. It is a,
and you know that Faye Dunaway was on set being like, let me at her. I'm yeah. going to knock these tables over.
Yeah.
I also want to call out a movie that I looked it up. It's not streaming anywhere, but it's featured quite prominently in the documentary Faye, and that's Puzzle of a Downfall Child from 1970.
Which I have never seen.
No, I've never seen it either.
Directed by Jerry Schatzberg, an undersung new Hollywood director, and he and Faye Dunaway were a couple for a while. I have seen it on Blu-ray. I would say, like, add it to a queue if you can, because if it ever shows up on streaming, and it may someday, it's really worth watching. That's a fascinating movie.
Yeah, there's another movie that you might want to catch, and it was her first actual film. That's Hurry Sundown from 1967. So that is a movie that's not going to hold up today for many reasons.
Is that Otto Preminger?
Otto Preminger. Yeah.
Well, we just gave you a lot of homework, but it'll be fun homework.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
At any rate, that was our discussion of the career highs of both Elizabeth Taylor and Faye Dunaway. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed the documentary films Elizabeth Taylor, The Lost Tapes, and Faye. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners, and we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the silent film star Clara Bow. Being a sex symbol is a heavy load to carry, especially when one is tired, hurt, and bewildered. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.